Right, counsel.
May it please the court, my name is Dennis White. I'm representing the appellant Frank Brothers in this matter. This case or appeal arises because the lower court granted the motion to dismiss brought on by respondent to dismiss the complaint. The complaint is based on the argument or contention that the state prevailing wage laws established by the state of Wisconsin in these contracts are preempted by the federal law under the Davis-Bacon Act and under the Federal Aid to Highway Act. Now, the facts of the case are fairly simple. It's basically a situation in which the appellant had a contract with the state of Wisconsin which received federal aid. The Davis-Bacon Act was incorporated in that contract, and under the Davis-Bacon Act regulations, the drivers are not covered by Davis-Bacon and are not required to be paid prevailing wages. Our contract and that of our subcontractors was to haul crushed limestone, and that under the Davis-Bacon Act, under specific regulations, specific federal court decisions, do not constitute construction under the Davis-Bacon Act. However, the state of Wisconsin has defined construction as including the hauling of crushed limestone, and therefore applied its prevailing wages to the Frank Brothers. And that leads us to the situation in which we've asked for declaratory relief and an injunction. Now, the...
Forgive me, Mr. White.
Certainly.
You seem to concede that the state could impose higher wages than Davis-Bacon requires for the construction jobs that are covered by the Act. For example, the jobs that are on site. How then could it be that the state couldn't impose higher wages for jobs that you concede are not covered by the Davis-Bacon Act?
I don't know that we make the initial concession. I think that the language in the Davis-Bacon Act and the Federal Aid to Highway Act has some language that would imply an intent to occupy the field. What we have contended was, in the alternative, that if in fact we accepted the state's contention that the state could pay more on covered work, that nevertheless, that when you move to non-covered work, that's outside the scope of the state's authority. The state's authority under Section 114 is limited specifically to construction work under state law. Now, it doesn't say that construction work, as defined in a federal statute, is defined by state law or by state law regulations. I think that's a federal definition that applies in Section 114. So therefore, if in fact federal law says that the states only have rights on construction to set wages, if you accept that argument, then they, by regular canons of statutory interpretation, don't have any right whatsoever to apply their prevailing wages to non-construction work. And that gets to the question that I wanted to address initially about field preemption. Admittedly, there's no express language that Congress here intended to preempt state law. So we look to other elements and other issues within the statute, obviously, to find if there's implicit preemption. And I think that there's some very strong language in the Davis-Bacon Act and in the Federal Aid to Highway Act that gives that implicit contention that the state is not supposed to set prevailing wages where the federal law does not. And I think you start with the premise that federal law under Section 113 of the Highway Act says you shall set wages in accordance with the Davis-Bacon Act. Then you also have Section 106D of the Federal Aid to Highway Act, which hasn't been responded to by the state, which says that even though the state has some responsibility to supervise the construction of the state highways that receive federal aid, that nothing in their responsibility removes the authority of the Secretary of Transportation through the Secretary of Labor to set wages under Section 113. Now, if you combine those two statements, I think that's a very strong indication of implicit intent. Now let's throw in some other elements and other contentions that we look at to address that. And that is that we have the federal policy guide under the Federal Highway Act that says states must agree to follow federal policies. Federal policies here are not to apply or set any wages for delivery people, or for anybody, all the way down to the lowest mechanic on the factory floor. That gets into an extensively controlled economy. There's no indication that Congress wanted to go that far. Then, in addition, you have the regulations, which indicate that the state is supposed to comply with federal policies. And finally, I'd like to point out a statement made by the court in the FHM contractors case, which we cited, and that is that in when HUD set their preemption under Davis-Bacon, they looked at the legislative history extensively of the Davis-Bacon Act, and HUD found that there was nothing that that showed that Congress intended to allow states to set higher wages than what the federal people were setting. That all the Davis-Bacon Act said, with its language about not less than or minimum or floor, if you will, was simply that the federal people set the prevailing wages. There might be bargaining with local unions that would relate to a higher wage, but there's no language whatsoever that says that the state can step in and set higher wages.
You're saying, in general, that the federal minimum wage legislation, of which this is a sort, is exclusive of state standard setting in that area. This is labor protective legislation. Why would it be exclusive of state legislation in the same area? I don't understand that.
Well, I think you have to look at the whole
statute.
This is
not contractor protective legislation. It's labor protective.
I understand that.
You can see that, don't you?
Well, I understand that it's labor protected, but let's look at how the statutes are intended to relate. Davis-Bacon Act says other federal laws can apply. So we've conceded, as well we must, that the Fair Labor Standards Act would apply. Therefore, it would allow the state minimum wage, even if it's higher, to apply to federal contracts. But the minimum wage under the Fair Labor Standards Act is a totally different concept than setting wages under federal contracts. Minimum wage is to the world out there, all factories, everybody. This is specific setting of wages on a federal contract.
Well, but it's more than that. In answering this question, would you add to the mix, please, and respond to the argument that the Supreme Court has twice stated that Davis-Bacon wasn't designed to benefit contractors, but rather was to set a floor on wages for government projects?
Well, merely because the Supreme Court said that doesn't mean, though, that the act can be stretched, and it doesn't address the question of what the state's role and the state's responsibility is within the Davis-Bacon Act. The U.S. Supreme Court decisions have only addressed the question of the Davis-Bacon Act as it relates to private contractors, hasn't addressed the issue of the state. To get back to Your Honor's point about the minimum wage, I'd really like to emphasize one thing, and I think it's fair to do this. If you look at all the protective labor legislation that Congress has passed, and it's a multitude, and we pointed out some in our brief, there's always been a savings clause. Always something says, nothing in this act prohibits the state from applying its laws. However, in the Federal Contract Act, there are no such savings clauses. And I think that's significant because the Federal Contract Act are something different.
What do you think about that phrase in the law that says federal law precludes application of wage rates to delivery work?
You mean in the regulation? Yeah, I think that that is indicative of the federal intent that when it comes to federal contracts,
it says precludes application of wage rates.
Well, I believe that comes in the regulation.
Pardon?
That comes in the regulation, I believe. But there again, I think that that shows that the federal contracts are intended to be something different than regular federal or state, the regular relationship between state and federal laws. Federal contracts are a means of setting federal policy, and that the states have to follow that policy. I see that I'm in rebuttal time, so
yes, you are.
You are, but I do have a quick question for you, because I'm wondering what evidence you have other than Congress's silence on the subject that Congress intended the free market to determine wage rates for off-site jobs.
It's a matter of construction of the statute. It's a matter of comparison to other statutes. And I think that's a fair comparison, that this statute and the federal contracting statutes are totally different than having state laws interplay with federal laws in general commerce issues.
Thank you, Counsel. All right.
May it please the Court, Your Honors, my name is William H. Ramsey, representing the Wisconsin Department of Transportation and its secretary. First, regarding the fact, the reason we're talking about highway construction contracts, and they are jointly funded by state and federal funds. The difference in coverage does not derive from the definition of the term construction. It arises from the fact that there are two different laws under the Davis-Bacon Act. Only workers working directly upon the site of the work are eligible to be are covered under that act, whereas under Wisconsin law, it's workers performing work under the contract, and therein comes the difference in coverage. Work under the contract, pursuant to court decisions and long-term administrative interpretation, applies to the work at issue here, the delivery of limestone. So just to clarify that, what we start here with is a presumption that Congress did not intend to preempt the law, preempt application of the state prevailing wage laws to these contracts. And when we're dealing with labor legislation, Your Honors need to find a clear and manifest purpose of Congress that they did intend to preempt those laws, and it can come in a number of ways, addressed by the appellant.
Well, is silence one of them?
No, I don't think so. Not at all. In fact, on that note, if you look at the Federal Highway Act in Section 114, Congress was not silent on the application of federal laws. Congress actually said the construction work and labor in each state shall be performed under the direct supervision of the state transportation department and in accordance with the laws of that state and applicable federal laws. To the extent that Congress had any opinion at all, it affirmatively said, yes, you shall apply state labor laws to these contracts. They were not silent on the matter in any regard. We have two laws, the Davis-Bacon Act and the Federal Highway Act. First, the Davis-Bacon Act. There's clearly no conflict. As Your Honors have noted, and as the Supreme Court has noted twice, it only sets the floor. And the state of Wisconsin makes sure that Davis-Bacon Act is complied with. Most times, the wages are the same. But when a state requires higher wages, the Wisconsin Department of Transportation says you shall pay the higher of the two wages. That way, neither the state or the federal law is violated because you're above the floor. As far as the objectives and purposes of Congress, again, the Supreme Court has twice said it's labor legislation enacted to benefit workers. It is not legislation enacted to set a ceiling or a guaranteed price for contractors. And I do not see the appellant arguing that the Davis-Bacon Act itself evinces an intent to preempt the field. I see that more with the Federal Highway Act, which I'll get to now. The Federal Highway Act, in terms of conflict, merely adopts Davis-Bacon. It says you shall not pay not less than the wages required under Davis-Bacon. Again, as noted and we've dealt with in our brief, that's not happening. In terms of the objectives and purposes, there is, again, the clear language of the statute says that you shall apply state labor laws as well as federal labor laws, and I don't see any way to get around that. And finally, I think the decision cited by Judge Crabb in her decision, a very good decision, I think, in CSWA really does go address the identical issue. And they, in that case, did point out that Davis-Bacon is a floor, not a ceiling, and that the state is free to impose additional requirements if it so chooses. And finally, as we noted in our brief, and I apologize, a lot of what I'm talking about is, in fact, in our brief. In 1985, the Department of Transportation, or the United States Department of Transportation, explicitly set forth its interpretation of the Davis-Bacon and the Federal Aid Highway Act and said that they do not preempt the application of state prevailing wage laws that are more extensive both in maybe imposing higher costs as well as imposing greater coverage. They proposed a rule that would do so, citing their broad discretionary authority to preempt state laws where they impose additional costs. That's not an issue here, but they withdrew.
Counsel, isn't it true that Congress's intention is that the said drivers be so consummated and paid at a free market rate?
I see nothing in the legislative history, the language of the statute, or otherwise that it requires a free market wages be paid if they aren't covered in the Davis-Bacon Act.
Pardon me, if they're not what?
Well, I don't see that in the language of the statute that says if you're not covered by the Davis-Bacon Act, you will receive free market rates. It's not there. Yeah.
Could you waive your administrative exhaustion argument as the plaintiff?
You know, I
in footnote 2 here. Where in the record did you preserve it?
I did not preserve it, Your Honor. It was in response to an argument made that somehow the U.S. Department of Transportation has sort of overlooked the fact that the Wisconsin Department of Transportation is violating its contracts. And I think we went through the legislative history and that rulemaking to point out that the U.S. Department of Transportation has known for a very long time that this is going on, and they continue to approve the contracts. And in fact, they never have not approved the contract.
So did you waive it or didn't you waive
it? I don't think it's an argument. It's really before the court today. We're talking about preemption and not whether the Federal Highway Administration.
So you waived it, but it doesn't matter?
If it was raised, we waived it, but I don't think it was raised anyway. And yes, it doesn't matter. And, Your Honors, I believe my time is about up, and unless you have any other questions, sit down.
All right, Counsel. Thank you.
I'd like to address some of the issues that were raised by Counsel for the respondent. One of the issues that he raised was that in 1985, the Department of Transportation said that they had no intent to preempt state laws at that time, which is somewhat unique in comparison to what HUD did. But I think we need at this point to look to some of the instruction from the Supreme Court in Hillsborough, because when the Supreme Court in Hillsborough talked about what an administrative agency had done and what weight was to be given to that. It said that you needed to look at changes that have occurred since the administrative agency made that decision. Now, there have been several changes here since 1985. The first one, of course, was 1992 when the Federal Department of Labor came up with its regulation that drivers would no longer be covered. And that was a reversal of 60 years of history. And I don't think the Department of Labor at that point was prepared to address the issue of preemption. But that is a significant change, and that's what's brought this particular case to the attention of the court. Another change was in 1998, and that was when Congress amended the Federal Highway Act and put in and clarified with Section 106D that said the state's responsibility for supervising doesn't take away at all from the Secretary's determination on prevailing wages. And those are changes since 1985 that I think are very important and therefore diminish any statement by the DOT in 1985. I'd also like to point out that, again, even here in oral argument, the state doesn't respond at all to what is the intent and the significance of Section 106D that was passed in 1998, where it says state supervision doesn't take away any power from the Secretary of Transportation to set wages. To me, that's a very, very compelling argument about the implicit intent of Congress. Appellant has also contended that Wisconsin law is broader in coverage and covers construction. We acknowledge that it's broader in coverage. That doesn't mean that it can be applied to federal law. And I think it's rather interesting that the state, when they applied their specifications for wages, said it only applies to construction work. And that's inconsistent with our argument now. Their very specifications said it only applies to construction work. And I don't think that this court can allow a state to insert its definition of construction into a federal statute when the federal statute has its own definition of construction in Section 101 of the Federal Aid to Highway Act. It just can't be done, and I don't think the state has addressed that. Now, the appellant has also addressed the Suisse Law case. As we've indicated in our brief, we think that's highly distinguishable. It had another federal act, the Apprenticeship Act, which was applicable in that case, and that was where you incorporate state law. And that's what's different about this situation. There isn't any mechanism to incorporate state prevailing wage laws into the Davis-Bacon Act or into the Federal Aid to Highway Act. And Section 114 does not do that because it's simply limited to construction. And construction is defined by federal law. So there's no mechanism to draw in another federal statute which allows a state to then incorporate a state prevailing wage. And I think that's a very significant thing. In closing, I would say to the court, I think that the larger or the more significant argument for preemption comes out of field preemption. However, I do think that there is conflict between the intent here, and we've already addressed that issue in our brief. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you, counsel. We will